You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 197, interview with Shelley Buck and Kathy Curtis, authors of Leave Your Light On. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties because it's time to dive into today's episode. Hello, everybody. My name is Chelsea Robson, and I am your host for today's episode. In 2020, Disney Plus released a miniseries behind the scenes of the making of Frozen 2. While I watched it, they mentioned that one of the co-directors, Chris Buck, had lost his son during the making of Frozen. I was stunned. If you are a longtime fan of us here, then you will know that we covered the making of Frozen heavily in 2013. I didn't know this part of the history. I had a chance to read the book Leave Your Light On, written by Chris's wife. And she was gracious enough to come on for this interview. I'd like to say that this covers the human side of this cartoon. This book covers the raw emotions that she went through while her husband was at work creating Frozen, what was happening at home with her and her son and her kids. And, you know, it was the book itself is beautiful. It's beautifully written. It's beautifully laid out. It's also incredibly tragic. But at the same time, hopeful. And as is mentioned later on, I really do agree and feel like you come out a better person having read it. So because of that, I'm grateful to have her on today, and I'm grateful to be able to share this interview. Make sure to stay tuned till the very end because I will be going through and sharing some of my plans for 2021, as well as an additional research if you'd like to know more about this book. All right, here we go.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
I'm really glad to have both of you guys on today. So for everybody listening, I'm just going to go ahead and start. Shelley and Kathy were co-writers, as well as writer Shelley's son, with the book Leave Your Light On, the musical mantra left behind by an illuminating spirit. And I was able to read this book, and it's definitely something that adds a lot of depth. Just to give a little bit of a synopsis of this, while the movie Frozen was being produced, Shelley and Chris Buck, Chris is the co-director of Frozen, their son, he was diagnosed with cancer, went through cancer treatments. Would you say he was cleared?
Yeah, he was cleared in May of 2013.
He had been cleared of cancer, but then he was tragically killed in a car accident. And so this is her story, and also writer's story, as well as their family story. And it was beautiful because it was also you know, that it was a celebration of his life, as well as a connection of how everybody deals with the trauma of losing someone, as well as going through something like cancer treatments and realization of mortality, I would say. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I'd like to start out with is, Kathy, as you have been helping Shelley, what would you say your role in this was?
Well, it was partly a co-author, because what Shelley had done is she had put together a journal. She had been keeping a journal all through the cancer treatment with, you know, that Ryder went mm-hmm. through. And then after his passing, she continued to write in her journal about her grief. And so someone had read all that and said, you really should write a book. Mm-hmm. But she needed to put it into more of a story, a narrative than mm-hmm. journal form. And because I'm a writer and I had written other books and I have a background in grief, it was, and I'm her best friend and I know the family well. I mean, it's like
we're all connected deeply.
It was really kind of destiny that my life had prepared me to show up at her door at the moment she needed me more than ever.
Right. Oh.
But I think, you know, I'll tell you that we were best friends from the time we were 12, and we've lived apart our entire adult lives, but we've always been, you know, in touch. But during the writing of the book, we were on the phone every single day for 2 years.
Right.
A lot. And so any grief that continued to be, you know, need to be cleared, I think it was really good for her to have me there walking that path with her. So,
absolutely. Yeah.
I can totally see that for sure. So Shelley, as you're going through and writing this, you've created all these, you have all these journals, you have all this information. What was the moment where you decided that you're like, okay, this is going to be a way that I can process my emotions and also just process this time period? Like, what was that decision like?
The idea of the book, as Kathy said, had been floated by several people, and I was a little reluctant. It seemed like a monumental chore. But then this was a few years after my son had passed, and Ryder got in touch with me through a friend who receives messages from the other side mm-hmm. and said, Mom, write my story. So that was the tipping point. That was what made me say, okay, this has to be done. And then I reached out to Kathy in kind of a funny way. I had no idea who I was going to get to co-author the book. And she just said the obvious, which was, what about me? You know, and I was like, okay, that was stupid, but yes, of course. So we started on that journey, and it became a healing process. The journaling had been very, very good for me, but the writing of the book became extremely cathartic and healing. And with Kathy's deft touch, we were able to work through a lot of the trauma. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, for sure. So when you're going through and making this and putting this all on paper, it's, I mean, I'll just say how it was constructed was very well done. I mean, you start off and you're reading it as though you're right in this fight with you, but then halfway through the book, it starts hitting you with the fact that this isn't going to end well. Because you're starting to hear, you're reading your story of the fight to continue, but also the fact that he has died. And so you have different pieces from other friends as they've, you know, give their memorial to him as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at first it's jarring because you're so in this moment with you, and but you're also confronted with the fact that it's not going to end the way you want it. But I'm going to tell you, like, the whole last third of the book, I'm just here crying with you just because it is so beautiful. I loved how you were able to be very raw with the fact that, you know, especially when working through cancer, you have day ups and down days on both sides, on all sides. You know, everybody, the person, and not just with cancer, but I think any type of severe medical treatment, you're dealing with a lot of things that aren't natural. And there's a lot of shifts in your moods and everything. So I appreciated that you were able to leave those things in, because to me, it also read that, you know, the empathy that we all have for each other, we can have for each other, even though we may be going through difficult times. Chris has done several movies, and each one I'm sure has memories that are attached. But as far as like when you're thinking of Frozen, what are some of the main memories that come to mind, knowing that so many of these were intertwined?
Well, see, Frozen brought up, he did some travel to places north and ice castles, and you know, not physically, but brought us along on those. And we got the sense of the environment, the realization of Elsa that she needed to obviously let it go. And that became a catchphrase for our lives and around the world. I mean, it was very timely. It was something that people needed to hear. And I think that's why it caught on. That was a big part of it. There were little things like Sven being modeled after our golden retriever. You know, his behavior was that of a big dog. So that kind of made it personal. Yeah.
All right. So during all of this, Ryder is still alive during most all of this, except for the very, very, very end. I just found it very interesting because there was one story where Chris talks about over the Christmas before, you know, before he died, how he had been home a lot and he was able to have a swimming time. Like he went out and was in the pool with him a little bit.
Right.
What were some of the best memories that you can remember through that as well?
Well, during Ryder's cancer treatment, I was with him every day in the hospital. He was in 1 week and outpatient for 2 weeks. And the time I had in the hospital with him, he would play his guitar, write new music. We'd watch videos of his favorite bands. And then I always knew that when I left around 6 or 7 o'clock, Chris was coming from work to spend a few hours of the evening with Ryder. This was tough because he was working 7 days a week during this time. So when he got time off that Christmas of 2012, it was a real respite, and he made the most of it, spending time with the boys and just being a great dad and a great husband. But Ryder and I, we had our times during the cancer treatment where, you know, he pushed away. It wasn't always that I was welcome in the room. When he was outpatient, he was off and running and going up the coast and up to the mountains and down to the beach. And I had to learn to let go. And that was a tough one. As a mother of a son who's facing a life-threatening disease, I wanted to be with him all the time. And the only time I was really able to do that was when he was in the hospital. So we spent as much time as we could together. But when he was home, he wanted to get away from the cancer house and the cancer mom. And he took off.
Yeah. No, I mean, I completely understand. My dad went through cancer twice, two bouts with it for a while. And so you can definitely see, you know, how there's a lot of emotions that go into that, and not just for the person, but for everyone surrounding them. So I can definitely see how both sides were shifting. I was really moved with things that he would do while he was away from you, even though maybe it was difficult for you because he was fighting the cancer house, as you put it. But when he was off and running, also, as you put it, like the little memories that his friends put in there were really touching. He was definitely a very special person. It was beautiful to see, even through that, the close-knit structure of your family is also very evident. And it's wonderful to see. Oh, thank you. I mean, there was another thing that I noticed that you mentioned several times, how Ryder had changed like spiritually as he was going through, like that was one of his major transformations during this time. Did you notice that while he was going through it, or was this a something that you noticed after?
Oh, no, it was while he was going through it. He was writing and playing songs that had to do with dying. And he always took a library of books with him to the hospital, many of them spiritual books. And so he was reading and studying the great teachers, the great spiritual teachers. Mm-hmm. And he would talk about it and recommend books to us. Then he went to Bali his last summer after mm-hmm. he'd been cleared, and really immersed himself in their culture, their belief system, the melanism, the generosity of their culture. And he came home a different man. He had grown and done so much introspection and meditation that it was palpable in the house. You could really tell. And he wanted even more of a calm environment, which was difficult to achieve. I'm high energy. My youngest son is a tornado. And for Ryder to come into the house with it just almost chaotic. I mean, Chris is very calm, but the household was not quiet, was not a place where you could just meditate. I mean, sometimes he'd go out back into a circle of trees and stones and play his guitar or meditate, but often he just left the house to find that quiet space. And I was learning, as I have been his entire life, to chill. That was what he would say to me constantly, chill, Mom. And he still does. When I get worried or frustrated about something, I hear his voice say, you know, with a laugh, chill, Mom, you know, it's all going to be fine. And that was his mantra and his way of being in the world.
Mm-hmm. So looking forward, when I also felt like this was a really great book, especially for people who may be going through something similar. Do you get a lot of people coming up to you with that, saying that it has helped you, or they've read it during a similar time period?
Well, we have had a lot of wonderful feedback, how, you know, people have come to kind of spiritual awakenings, that they've been comforted, or Kathy could speak more to the process of writing and reading as a healing tool. That's what mm-hmm. she does. But I found that we've gotten a lot of response as far as this being an uplifting book, though it sounds like it could be depressing talking about cancer and death. It's ultimately an optimistic, hopeful, inspirational book. That's what we wanted to put out there, was something that could lift people up and help them find their own light.
I love it. Yes. So Kathy, we have a lot of people who listen to the podcast who are in the industry, animation, or they're just storytellers themselves. And I know that both of you are storytellers. You mentioned how you met Chris while working at Disney because you loved storytelling as well. And what are some of the things, if somebody is going through a difficult time, how have you helped different people use their stories to move through grief, trauma, et cetera?
Et cetera, yeah. You know, I do a writing program for people that are going through grief. And more than anything, my approach has been not so much to help them tell a story like in a book, but more to write to their loved one who has died about what it was like mm-hmm. to, you know, go through the trauma of the loss, to imagine their life without that loved one in it, to it's just like the things that happen to us get trapped in our bodies. You know, when we go through a loss, we go through pain of any kind, we tend to hold a lot of it in our bodies. And what writing does is it really allows you, through the power of words, to let that trauma out and let the pain out. And when you can get it on paper, you can think about it differently and process it differently. So that's kind of been my background, which actually, you know, I had lost my mom to cancer, and I wrote to her just because I wanted to clear my emotional, you know, being out a little bit, because I was holding so much of that pain in. But then I allowed her to write back to me, just through kind of a spiritual leap of faith that I was hearing from her. And it was very, very, very healing, like profoundly healing. And so the journey that we go through when we lose someone, I think we really accelerate our healing when we can lift into that spiritual realm. Like, I think that's part of what we're being taught about the mortality. You know, is it really the end? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I personally agree. So as you're working with different people, maybe they didn't lose somebody. Maybe they're just going through a really difficult time for whatever reason. Maybe the world around them just seems smaller than what it has felt in the past. What are some ways that they can get behind that or ahead of that or around
ahead of that? Well, for one thing, you know, there's just so much scientific evidence that, number one, if you're feeling awful and you sit down and write about it, and write it honestly, like say exactly what you feel, you get a release of chemicals from your brain that make you feel better right then and there. Like right then and there, it's like a drug, kind of. Mm-hmm. But it also, it's like it creates a flow of energy that allows you to move it out and move it out and move it out. And one of the things that I love telling is about this group of like 50-something men from England who had all been job eliminated from a job they had had forever. They never thought they would have to look for another job. Mm-hmm. And they did a study, and they had a third of the men write about exactly what was going on, like what their pain was, what their fear was, all that. They had a group of men that just wrote things like, I had a hamburger today at lunch, you know, just kind of trivial. Then they had a group that didn't write anything. The group that wrote about their feelings and about how they really felt found not just better, you know, a job, but a better job way faster than the other people. So there's proof that we can affect change in our lives by just expressing it, you know, by writing about it. So anyway, I think there's a lot of power in that, and you don't have to go anywhere. You can take a piece of paper and a pen and automatically find comfort and find it's just inspiration. You may find that what comes out on the paper, you wouldn't have thought about in your head. It's just something different happens when you do that writing.
Yeah. So I write music as my main profession, and I'll help people write like custom like songs for the like memorials or for a loved one of some kind. And I do find that, you know, sometimes what I'll have them do is I'll give them a questionnaire and just say, fill it out as much as you can. And then there's always that, you know, that group of people that fill out one word or two word answers. And I'm like, you're not helping. Yeah. You're not helping anyone. And then you have the other side, which, you know, they're able to just, you know, write as they speak. And, you know, going from that, it's a whole lot easier to actually turn it into something more with more depth. What do you think keeps people from writing that extra step or going from the one word answers to be able to expound?
Well, I feel that a lot of our, you know, what we've inherited as people is a fear of our feelings. You know, we're afraid of them. We bury them under the carpet. You know, we're not encouraged to express emotionally. And there's, I was talking to someone the other day, and they were telling me that, you know, when a baby is crying, you know, a parent oftentimes wants to say, no, stop crying, you know, but it's really the crying that heals them. Whatever's going on for them, the crying heals them. So the same thing is true when we're going through, I mean, grief or, you know, any really difficult challenge. we shy away from that feeling. But in fact, when we move into it, when we lean into it and feel it, we come out of it. Mm-hmm. But we can't come out of it until we do that. So mm-hmm. I think it's really fear. And I don't blame people for being afraid. That's kind of how we've been conditioned. But, you know, I admire what you're doing. And I totally get what you're saying about people who just want to give you the one word answer. Mm-hmm. But I do writing prompts, you know, for people that are going through my programs. And here's what might help you, actually. I lead a little bit of quiet meditation before, and I don't know if you're meeting with people one-on-one or in person, but when you can get people to clear their mind and calm their body and just get into a really quiet place, they are far more open to allowing what comes through to come out. That might help.
I will look into that. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Well, Shelley, when you were able to work with Kathy, what were some of the hurdles of going from, you know, you've had this type of manuscript and now you're moving into maybe the next realm of actually printing it and getting it out?
Well, first it was the organization of the book, because I had a linear timeline that didn't really serve the narrative version of the book. So mm-hmm. we mix things around. I mean, you find out early in the book that Ryder has passed, but then we flash back to times going through the cancer and stories from friends. And that was a big one for me, letting go of the timeline, because I wanted it to be as authentic as I wrote it in the first place. And it took me a while to see that it served the story better to jumble it around a little bit. Mm-hmm. And there were things that we had to take out of the book because it didn't serve the story as mm-hmm. well. And with Kathy's deft touch, I managed to grow through that and be able to let go of some things. And that was difficult. The process of actually putting the book together, beyond what we were doing together, we worked with a publisher of sorts, and they had input. They wanted to design the cover, which we did ourselves. They helped us reorganize and move through the process of actually putting a book out there. And it had its hurdles, but Kathy and I got through it, and mostly with her lead.
This wasn't self-published. You went through an actual publishing company.
No, it was self-published, but okay. We went through a company that helped us get it to publication. I did write to 600 agents.
Oh, wow.
With yes, early on, and that went nowhere, but I had covered all the ground I could possibly cover. And when that went nowhere, we just decided we'll just go forward. This is a book mm-hmm. that has to be written and has to be published. And I set up our own publication company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we released it with the help of Book Launchers, who was the company that we used to help us process the whole thing.
I feel like, especially today, it may seem like it's easier to get your book published, which it is, because the distribution channels are open to really anybody. But it's also, when you're doing it on your own, you actually really come to see how much goes into creating a book. And it is both easier and harder because when you're the one doing it, you actually have to go through and do every step. What are some things that you would say, as far as if you're talking to somebody and they were thinking about going through and publishing their book? What would be some things that you would tell them to do?
I would tell them to definitely get professional help in putting their story together. It really does make a difference, because you're myopic as a single author. Of course, I had Kathy all along the way, but this company also helped us see the broader picture. So getting help in putting the story together is paramount, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the major takeaways from this process that you've had?
Well, working with the theme of the book, which is to leave your light on, I've learned from being in touch with Ryder and his light that it fed my own and kind of brought me back out of the darkness. So the writing process and contact with my son brought me the ability to face life again. After he passed, I didn't want to live, but I had two other children and a husband, and there was never any question about it. It was just what I had to do, was one step in front of the other. But Ryder helped substantially with that by coming through and communicating and giving us signs. Several of them are in the book. I learned the process Kathy teaches or lives, leads, and that it really brought me around and back to my own light.
Oh, that's beautiful. And Kathy, as far as this project, what are some of the major takeaways you've had?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, being spiritual and having definitely being open to the spiritual realm and feeling Ryder in my life every day. Well, I mean, I've always known him and I've always loved him, but you know, the writing of the book put him kind of at my side every day, all day for a long, long time. And I know that I've been affected by that. I know that I'm more chill than I was before. And, you know, one of the most charming elements of Ryder to me is the fact that he was such a range of, you know, just incredibly wise and spiritual and warm and loving and exasperating and aggravating and pain in the butt. I mean, he could be all that, but he did it all with this kind of joy. Like he didn't try to hide parts of himself and just show the best. He did it all. And that is really the nature of his light. That's why I think it is so bright and why people maybe are moved by the book, because they're seeing, you know, we all worry so much about, am I good enough? Am I enough? Do I, you know, should I change this because it's not really that great of a quality? It's like we just have to be more fully who we are. And that's all we really have to do. If we do it with good intentions, you know, we're good to go. So anyway, that's really a wonderful takeaway from a young guy who, you know, I have friends that are my age that have said, you know, I feel like I'm a better person now that I've read this book. And I think that's what it is that I feel like more of who I am. So, yeah.
I agree. I mean, as difficult as it is to go through that with someone, because you really do feel like you're going through it with you. And as difficult as that is, because it does bring up quite a bit, especially if anybody has any connections to their own story within that, there is definitely going to bring up other things. But I think having, you know, going through it is another way to help you get through your own spiritual tasks, I guess, because there is a task list that I think we all have to kind of get through. I'm also reading this other book. It's called Feelings Buried Alive Never Die. And it's, you know, that title
is amazing.
Wow. Even just the title, like it's just yes. So it's, there's so much that can be done through this discovery that you both are, Kathy, that you're helping other people's, and also Shelley, that, you know, even though you're not actively going out as Kathy is and helping people by doing it, you are helping people do that same thing.
Definitely.
So I do know, or at least from what was told in some of the background stories on Frozen 2, they said that the next right step was written somehow in connection to his story. Can I get your side of that story as well?
Well, it's the next right thing. And
oh yes.
Yeah. Well, Frozen 2, of course, was 6 years after Ryder had passed. And I didn't know the song until I saw the screening of the movie in the celebration, the wrap party. And I was moved to tears and I leaned over to Chris and I said, was this on purpose? Was this for me? And he said, yes, of course. Ryder was part of the inspiration for that song because of what we had gone through and because everyone on the crew, including the songwriters, mm-hmm. knew and lived it with us. Right. That song really epitomizes what I had to do from the very beginning, was just take the next step, do the next right thing. And that's how I got through the first many, many months of my grief, was to just put one foot in front of the other and pick up the ball. Like I said, I had two other sons, they needed me, and there was plenty to do when I felt paralyzed at first. But the song was really, really inspirational after the fact. Of course.
I wanted to say thank you both for coming on to the Rotoscopers podcast today. I've really enjoyed this whole session. I want to be able to respect your guys' time and just say thank you once again for not only for your story right today, but also for having written the books and for having been so open with everything, because I honestly believe that it's through the sharing of hard truths that we're all able to grow a little closer, you know, because we've all been able to experience some level of something along those lines. And mm-hmm. So I just wanted to say thank you for both of you for coming on today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Shelly, tell Chris Rotoscoper said hi.
I will do that.
Hopefully he'll remember us.
Oh, I'm sure he will.
All right. Well, have a wonderful day and we will talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks Bye-bye. So much, Chelsea.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode today. And I wanted to thank again Shelley Buck and Kathy Curtis for joining me. I know I got a lot out of it and I hope you guys did too. All right. So you guys want to know a little bit of what's planning to happen in 2021. Well, first let's start off with a recap of 2020. Nope, we're not going to go into the craziness of that. But I will say that in the 9 years since we started in 2012, the rotoscopers.com website has never skipped a beat. We have been full-fledged for the last 9 years, and we have amazing writers and columnists on there, and we are so glad and grateful for them. Like, seriously, it's amazing. Even though, you know, you had so many things, all of the movie industry, everything, like, shifted, and every movie is, you know, who knows what's happening. Well, the rotoscopers.com calendar knows it all, and I'm very impressed by this, because if you have any question about any animated movie that's coming out, that is going to be on that. You know, we are still updating that all the time. So make sure to check that out. Don't ever forget about the website. That one is and always has gone strong. All right, for the podcast, well, we started back up again in 2020, which is kind of a weird year to get started up again after being on hiatus for a couple. But we decided that we were going to, you know, start up, and we did. And we've had great episodes, you know, from then until now. And we have still great episodes coming and planned. There is a little bit of a thing that we'd like to, you know, ask a little bit of patience on. First off, Morgan is about to have baby number 3. Yeah! So her life is about to get really crazy. And that just means, like, once again, we just need a little bit of patience from you guys as far as the consistency of new episodes over the next couple of months. Both Morgan and I have some really cool things happening in our personal public lives. For example, if you are interested in hearing a full review of the book Leave Your Light On and other books that I'm reading, I just started the Chelsea Robson IRL podcast. IRL meaning in real life. It's an internet speak thing, and I'm not very creative, so that's just what I went with. Anyway, that's where I'm at. So the Chelsea Robson IRL podcast, and that is going to be where I talk about creating incomes via side hustles as well as self-improvement, and also share stories behind my custom songs in a series I call Share the Love. And if you want more information, you just go to chelsearobson.com. Morgan just launched a program to help people who want to start a YouTube channel and create a business from it. You can learn more about that and even get on the wait list for the next time it opens up at morganstradling.com. So you see, we've got lots of things going on, and we are still just trying to kind of figure out our catch our bearings and figure out how we're going to make everything fit. So we're glad to have you, and we're excited for this new year. And I know that it's hard to think, oh, 2020 was crazy, 2021 already crazy. But here's a quote that I really liked that is helping me in my day-to-day. It's not what the year brings to you. It's what you bring to the year. Make sure to act and not react. Those are the two main things. If you're able to take those two things and just say, you know what, whatever comes this year doesn't matter. I mean, we're agile and we can get this thing going, whatever it is. So I hope that you guys have that attitude and that you're able to keep a positive outlook in everything that is happening right now, and that you can be the one that acts and doesn't react. So those are the main things that I wanted to leave with you guys on this episode. Once again, check out rotoscopers.com for all of your animation news, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.